Welcome everyone to our weekly Course in Miracles study group. As always, I'm very grateful that we have all decided to just pause and come together for an hour to strengthen these ideas in our mind. If you are able and would like to join me, let's just do a few minutes of tuning in, dropping into meditation. If you're able, closing your eyes. And there's so much out there to pull our attention, to distract us from the truth. And yet it's by pausing and allowing our minds to sink beneath the clouds, the fog, to the truth within, that we can rest in this truth and be guided in very specific ways on how to extend love into the world. And connecting with your sense of willingness and offering this willingness to Holy Spirit. This holy instant we give to you. Be you in charge, for we would follow you, certain that your direction gives us peace. If we need a word or a thought or a tranquil, open mind, these are the gifts that Holy Spirit gives. And we gladly place the Holy Spirit in charge tonight by our request. And taking a nice, mindful, and deep breath in and out. And coming together to our perception of right here, right now. I'll be taking a few more deep breaths in if you and out if you need to. All right, so here we are diving into cameo number 32. It's called God Is, and I love this cameo for a number of reasons that I'll share as we go. We're going to learn about some of Helen's visions and how God is in the present. So let's go ahead and dive in. So cameo 32, God Is. When Bill and Helen unexpectedly joined in the goal of demonstrating another way, it was as if that flipped on a power switch deep inside Helen. Abilities that had lain mostly dormant in her began to stir to life. At first, she began to have inner visions, and then, somewhere in that same summer of 1965, she started to have psychic experiences. These experiences aroused considerable fear and anxiety in Helen. After being virtually obsessed with the search for God as a child, she had, as an adult, left religion and spirituality firmly behind. She says, "I had shifted from agnosticism to angry atheism, having reached a point where the mere mention of religion irritated me. I was heavily armed with, quote, scientific weapons, prepared and even eager to do battle with ideas even remotely religiously toned. So the commentary continues. Helen apparently saw the notion of psychic abilities as one of those, quote, religiously toned ideas. It was as if psychic phenomena were a kind of gateway drug that could lead the unwary into the most dangerous of addictions, the addiction to God. And yet, here she was, having her own undeniable experiences with that gateway drug. How could that not lead to fear? Right alongside this fear, however, Helen had another very different reaction to her psychic episodes. She says, I was actually becoming rather proud of the acquisition of such dramatic abilities, she says, and I even caught brief glimpses of fantasies of power and prestige crossing the back of my mind. This kind of egotism seemed to actually threaten to take hold of her newfound abilities. Some of the stories she reports convey this impression. For instance, when Bill went away on a trip to the Virgin Islands, Helen sent him a mental message to bring her back a Florentine gold pin, which he actually did. On another occasion, as she and Bill prepared for a business trip to the Mayo Clinic in Rochester, Minnesota, she saw an inner picture of a Lutheran church. She was so sure this picture was genuine that she described it in writing, told Bill they would see it when they landed, and then, when they didn't see it, dragged him around town in a taxi looking for it. She says, it had become outrageously important to me. On their way home, Bill did find a picture of her Lutheran church, but it had long ago been torn down so that, ironically, the Mayo Clinic itself could be built. In both this episode and the one with the gold pin, while the abilities employed were not out of the ordinary, the motives behind them certainly, While the abilities employed were out of the ordinary, the motives behind them clearly were not. And yet, some of her psychic experiences had an entirely different quality. For example, once, when she and Bill were working on a research paper, Helen suddenly put the papers down and with great urgency said, "Quick, Bill, your friend Joe, the one we met in Chicago a while back, he's thinking about suicide. We must send him a message." She then sent the silent message, "The answer is life, not death." That evening, Bill called Joe, who said he had been depressed and had actually picked up a gun that afternoon, but had ended up putting it down. In another instance, on the way back from the Mayo Clinic visit and the desperate search for the Lutheran church she had seen in her mind, Helen put those same abilities to different use. She was able to psychically feel waves and waves of misery going through a young woman in the airport, even though the woman showed no outward signs of distress. Helen went over to talk to this woman, whose name was Charlotte, and learned that she was terrified of flying. So Helen and Bill then sat on either side of her on the plane, with Helen holding her hand. Charlotte, it turned out, was leaving her home and family to relocate to New York with just a few $100s in her pocket. Helen says, she was a Lutheran, and she was sure all she had to do was find a Lutheran church in New York, and they would take care of her there. Bill and I exchanged glances. The message was not hard to grasp. And this, I seem to hear, is my true church, helping another, not the edifice you saw before. During the little more than a week that Charlotte was in New York, Helen and Bill became her support system, helping her with everything. They thus ended up rendering vital assistance to her at a crucial juncture in her life. With both Charlotte and Joe, the point of the story was not what an amazing ability Helen had. The point was that someone in crisis had received critical help just when he or she needed it. Here, then, was an entirely different way of seeing Helen's surprising gifts. Using them for a loving purpose was an alternative to both her feelings of pride and her feelings of fear. This point was not lost on Helen. The episode with Charlotte in particular helped shake her out of her fantasies of celebrity and bring her to her senses. She said of Charlotte, "I'm very grateful to her. I have an idea that I might never have found that scroll without her help. It might well be that magic had to end in the plain fact of Charlotte before I could make the final decision to abandon magic in exchange for something much more desirable." In mentioning that scroll, Helen is referring to her key experience, which came sometime after the Mayo Clinic trip, in which she decided once and for all to abandon magic. So here comes Helen's words. "My own magic phase ended abruptly with a particularly clear picture episode in which I knew I had made an irrevocable choice. I saw myself entering a cave cut into a rock formation on a bleak, windswept seacoast. All I found in the cave was a large and very old parchment scroll. Its ends were attached to heavy, gold-tipped poles, and the scroll was wrapped around them so that they met in the middle of the scroll and were tied tightly together. With some difficulty, I managed to untie the ends and open the scroll just enough to reveal the center panel, on which two words were written, 'God is.' Then I unrolled the scroll all the way. As I did so, tiny letters began to appear on both sides of the panel. The silent voice, which I had heard before, explained the situation mentally to me." And this voice said to her, "If you look at the left side, you will be able to read the past," said the voice. "If you look at the right side, you will be able to read the future." The little letters on the sides of the panel were becoming clearer, but I hesitated only a moment before rolling up the scroll sufficiently to conceal everything except the center panel. "I'm not interested in reading the past or the future," I said with finality. "I'll just stop with this." The voice sounded both reassured and reassuring. "You made it that time," it said. "Thank you." And that, it seemed, was that. In this vision, then, Helen made an irrevocable choice to renounce the use of her abilities for purposes of the ego and devote them purely to God. With that decision, her preparation for being the scribe of A Course in Miracles was complete. Okay, we're going to pause here just for a moment since I've read a bunch. So I guess I'll just share two things that stand out at me. Somewhere on the Foundation for Inner Peace's website, I think it was there, I read an interview with Bill Thetford, a written interview, about their trip to the Mayo Clinic. And the description of the church that Helen had given him and their frustration in not being able to find this church anywhere. And then I believe, if I remember, maybe it even just said it here, that Bill did find a picture of her Lutheran church. It was something like a brochure that he came across that he was looking at, I believe, when they were at the Mayo Clinic. And they were shocked to see that that was, in fact, the exact same Lutheran church that, you know, Helen had in her vision, in her mind. So I guess this is particularly meaningful for me too, because I've shared with you all before that I've had not similar to Helen, but like different types of unexplainable experiences that I don't really know what they're about, although I have hunches. And just hearing how Helen's visions and how these experiences came through her, it's just very meaningful to me. I also am struck this beautiful experience of this scroll. of it rolling open and God is being in the middle, her making the choice to not go into the future, not read the future, not read the past, but to stay in the present moment with God and this voice saying, you made it that time, thank you. To me, that brings up the course's teachings about how trials are but lessons that you failed to learn, presented once more. So where you once made a faulty choice, you can now make a better one. I guess this can apply to multiple lifetimes, you know, things like lessons maybe that we didn't learn or complete in another lifetime that are coming up now. I feel like that can also be very obvious at times in our own lives when it feels like the same issue keeps showing up and appearing in our experience over and over and over. Like for instance, in my history, the experience of anxiety. So that is just a very striking teaching and vision that she had to me, because it speaks to this idea of the trials are but lessons you fail to learn, and they're presented once more, and we have another opportunity to choose again. And that is the case in every single moment. Every single moment presents us with an opportunity to choose once again. Before I keep reading, does anybody feel moved to share or ask anything or highlight anything?
Hi, Corinne.
Hi, Nikki.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. So this is more about the details, not verses, about of what Helen reported versus the actual experience for Helen, but she talks about this right left. And I see a lot in my work, in my own personal healing and in my work, a lot about right left too. And I was just talking to a student of mine literally 15 minutes before this call about this, like trauma being on the left side and then the right side being a protective side in terms of energy work. So my question is, I think I'm kind of putting out to the group or to you, have you seen that as well? Because now Helen's mentioning it, I've experienced it, where she's right. She's talking about it in writing, past and future. Do you know anything about that at all?
I don't. The only thing that comes to mind for me at the moment is just, and it's in line with like, you know, past, future, and then God is like in my own journey. And even recently I've had to really, make a conscious effort to focus on what the Holy Spirit is giving me to do, which is right in front of me, which is like straight. I'm always, whether I'm turning right or left, I'm still facing forward. Right. So like in a sense for me, it's symbolic that I can face forward and do what the Holy Spirit is giving me to do, or I can get diverted and, you know, distracted by like, you know, looking elsewhere from what is right in front of me and given me to do. So I don't know anything other meaning, you know, to that, but those are just the thoughts that came up for me.
Can I ask if anybody on the call has any other experience with left, right in energy work, wellness work, visions, if they could throw it in the chat?
Sure.
Or if they don't want to talk, or, you know, if we have to go on, but if they
right.
Now, great. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you, Nikki. I know Deidre's camera has to be off. I'm just like, is there something there with angels? I don't know. Thank you, Nikki. Anybody else before we keep reading? Okay. Let's dive in. So she made the choice. Her preparation for being the scribe of the course is complete. Here we go. While Helen knew this vision was pivotal, it was only a number of years later that she discovered that it may not have been entirely subjective. In the summer of 1973, she and Bill joined Ken Wapnick in Israel for 2 weeks and ended up visiting Qumran, where the Dead Sea Scrolls were found. Qumran is the ruin of an ancient community which was occupied at the time of Christ. Most scholars believe that the people who lived at Qumran were members of the Essenes, a Jewish sect dedicated to voluntary poverty, communal living, and messianic expectations. The Dead Sea Scrolls were found in caves near the ruins of the community and appear to have been the library of the community. Ken Wapnick tells the story of Helen's visit to Qumran. Almost from the moment we arrived at Qumran, Helen was visibly moved, most uncharacteristic of her. As we stood on the site of the ancient community, we looked across the roped-off area to a series of caves, including the one where the scrolls were found in cylinders. At some point, Helen burst into tears and told us that the cave in front of her was the exact cave she had seen in her vision of the God Is scroll. She then exclaimed that she was standing on the holiest place on earth. Turning around to look at the Dead Sea, not far from Qumran, Helen remarked that the water level was too low and that it should be considerably higher. Bill consulted his guidebook, and sure enough, it stated that 2,000 years ago, the water level had indeed been much higher. Helen and I then walked towards some of the ruins, and she told me of her strong impulse to walk over to the area which the Essenes had used as their cemetery. But then she felt an equally strong impulse from Jesus not to do so, hearing him say to her, "Let the dead bury the dead." And so Helen stayed away from what she almost certainly felt to be her own gravesite 1900 years ago. The implication is clear. When Helen had her vision of being on a bleak, windswept seacoast and entering a cave in which she found an ancient scroll, she may have been revisiting an actual past in which she lived by the bleak coast of the Dead Sea as part of a community that placed their scrolls in nearby caves. More specifically, the implication seems to be that in that life, she had misused her abilities, and that in this vision, she was traveling back to the point at which the error was made to make another choice with Jesus. The statement, "you made it that time," obviously suggests that there was another time where she had used her abilities to read the outer sides of the scroll, the past and future. But this time, she chose the central fact that God is. None of this can ever be proven, of course. Yet it does fit nicely, both with things that Jesus said to Helen and with things that we know about the Essenes and the Dead Sea Scrolls. To begin with, Jesus often called Helen his scribe, a term that in this context referred to her ability to hear his voice and write down his words. This could potentially echo a Qumran connection, since that community had a heavy scribal focus, and that many of the scrolls found there seem to have been produced by the community itself, perhaps in the room that one archaeologist called the scriptorium because of the inkwells found there. Jesus also referred to Helen's earlier misuse of very great scribal abilities. If we connect this with her scroll vision, it is possible that this earlier misuse consisted of a focus on psychically reading the past and future as a member of the Qumran community. Interestingly, the Dead Sea Scrolls do contain a focus on prediction of the future. A number of the scrolls employ a method called Pesher, in which the prophetic books of the Hebrew Bible, already centuries old by then, are interpreted by a commentator as making predictions about the community's life in the present and the impending end times. This means that among the Dead Sea Scrolls, there were actual scrolls that alternated between writings of the past and predictions of the future, somewhat reminiscent of the very scroll that Helen saw. According to the ancient historian Josephus, the Essenes were renowned for reading the future. Quote, "There are also among them those who profess to foretell what is to come, being thoroughly trained in holy books, various purifications, and concise sayings of prophets. Rarely, if ever, do they fail in their predictions. End quote. Indeed, Josephus tells three stories of successful predictions made by named Essene seers. It may be, then, that Helen had been a seer in this very vein. Whatever the case was, her scroll vision obviously suggests that reading the past and future was a mistaken use of her abilities. Why? The implication of the scroll is that God exists in the present. God is, not God was or God will be. If Helen's focus was on reading past and future events, then all of her attention would be going to places where God could not be found. If, however, Helen could redirect her scribal abilities away from past and future and toward God in the present, then not only could she find God, but she could access spiritual wisdom that would enable others to find God. And compared to this greatest of all goals, finding out what happened in the past or what will happen in the future shrinks into insignificance. And I'll pause there for a moment before we read the last couple of pages. This, what comes up for me at this moment is how the Course doesn't take an official stance on past lives. Clearly, we have a sense that they seem to be a thing from, you know, these stories from Helen, from there is a reference in the Course that says, you know, Jesus says, if you need to know something from the, I can't think of the exact quote, but he basically says, if you need to know something from like a past life or from the past, I'll show you if it's of no use to your ego and helpful. It's something like that. So there's sort of like references to them, but the Course is very clear. I think it's in the manual for teachers or in the clarification, probably in the manual for teachers. Yeah, the section on what is reincarnation. It doesn't take a stance. And it's so clear why that is. It's a huge distraction. It's just a huge distraction. God is now here in this moment for us to turn to the Holy Spirit, for the Holy Spirit to choose for God for us. Getting caught up in past life stuff is just a distraction. Now, can it be useful at times? Like it says in that quote that I just referenced, I had, you know, one of my experiences with a past life memory came about because of an impasse, like a literal impasse that I had been involved in with a family member. And it took a past life vision, a painful past life vision, for me to almost feel like a plug that had been in my heart blocking my ability to love this family member. It took an intense experience like that for that plug to be lifted and to actually feel like I could freely love in a way that I had never loved this person before for like a very long time. So yeah, it can be a distraction. Do I believe in it? Absolutely. Because, for all the reasons just mentioned, but I previously mentioned too, that there's that Netflix show called Surviving Death. And I think it's 6 episodes and it's in the very, very last episode where they interview children who have very vivid past life memories, and they actually verify, you know, the information that the children are conveying about those actual lives, the actual manner through which they died. So it's pretty profound. So I think that's all I'll say here. Again, anybody have any questions or comments so far? So I see your question, Nikki. What unplugged your heart eventually? What unplugged my heart was in this particular circumstance, just finally owning all the ways that I had tried to just keep this other individual out of my life, away from me. And it was a past life vision that was just really painful and profound that showed our previous relationship of me doing the same types of things. it took something that profound for that unplug to happen. Linda, do you want to come on?
Yes. Hi. I'm new to the group and really new to the course. So maybe I'm just stating something really obvious, but I guess what struck me was, regardless of how she was using her powers, and regardless of it being in past or future lives, seems the course always says, you know, the future is in your imagination and the past doesn't exist. So even in this life, to focus on the future or the past is futile, that just focusing on the present and God and the Holy Spirit. But I guess that maybe that's kind of obvious.
Well, Linda, I really appreciate you saying that. And that is, you know, we in our minds can hang on to things. I mean, with anxiety is a wonderful, you know, anxiety is very skilled at latching onto the future. Depression is very skilled at latching onto the past. And so it keeps us from, you know, really dropping into the now and tuning into the now, which, as this is so clearly saying, is where God is. Actually, you're making me think of something. Did you have anything else you wanted to add?
With anxiety, just trying to not dive into the future is difficult. And then when you can just focus on the present and feel safe and good in the present is the key.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Linda. What's bubbling up for me at the moment, and this is something important. So in this vision, it says, we just read in this cameo that Helen had to be brought back to the time that the error was made in order to choose again. So in a sense here, now she is kind of going back to the past, but it's all happening in the present because it's all, you know, it's all happening now, really. The time isn't linear as we experience it. But she had to go back to that point where she made the error. I know in my experience, when I've shared this story before, there was a very, very, very like in my face moment where I lapsed into judgment. Couple days went by and I just started having like crappy days. Like things just were falling apart. I dropped my breakfast smoothie all over the floor. My, like, everything was out of sync and just not working. And I was like, wait, where did I go wrong? You know, what happened and where? And I was brought back to that moment of recognizing the intense judgment that I had. There was something happening in the country and people who felt differently about it than I did. I was judging them. And that moment of judgment brought me down the ego spiral staircase, smack down into the basement in a second. And I started seeing the effects of that showing up in my life. So there is usefulness. Now the past is gone and over, and yet, and God is in this moment. And yet, if we tune in and listen, if the Holy Spirit wants us to know or see or, you know, go back to that moment, we will be shown, you know, we will get that nudge. It will be clear that this is something that we need to look at. And that's why now this work with the Love Lens, and for those of you who might be new to the call, it's the Conversations on Racism and A Course in Miracles. And one of the things I've been listening to, I listened to this really fantastic podcast by, his name's Resma Menakem. He's a New York Times bestselling author. He wrote the book, My Grandmother's Hands. And he talked about needing context, needing to go back to context in order to fully heal. In other words, we need to have this understanding of how we got to where we are now in order to heal from centuries of torture and lynchings and all the horrors of racism. So with the journey of the Love Lens in some of the earlier episodes, we looked at a photo of a lynching. We are, you know, this, my white orientation for a long time was like, you know, I believe that was important for us to know about and learn, but I didn't fully understand that it's actually part of the healing process to when we're guided, which I believe we are right now on a big level, and personally, I know I am too, to understand context and how, and again, it can seem like that's going into the past. And yet Helen just had to do that. This is part of her vision, you know, going back to an actual choice point that she made. So that was bubbling up to kind of just throw out there, because it's easy. For instance, I have another family member who has lots of behaviors and says things that are hurtful. And because some things may have happened in the past that might, like this person's past trauma, it could be healed, but they refuse to go back into the past because it's over. Like, will not go there. It's over. It's over. I'm only staying in the present. And there's this, I had a client once say to me, if you sweep it under the carpet, it just remains for you to trip on. So just denying all that isn't necessarily helpful. This is where we need the Holy Spirit. We need Jesus. We need the Holy Spirit. That's everything in our healing. And we will be guided to look at whatever it is that we need to in our healing journey. So that's where there's no bypassing. So thank you for, I hope that all made sense. Thank you for my my tangent there. It was bubbling up to the surface.
Corinne, this is so useful. Yeah. What you say is just so useful.
Oh, good, yeah. Good. Thank you.
Because I also got attend the family constellation workshop. It's kind of like, I feel like I need to be there to express my emotion, because it has been stuck in my body for many, many years, because I'm a person who suppress my emotion a lot. I feel that place is a good place for me to release myself from the past. Yeah. How do you see the family constellations? Is it?
Fanny, I'm just getting into that. I'm fascinated by it. Yeah. It's new territory for me. I don't know much about it, but I actually have an appointment with someone who specializes in that, because I've had so much bubble up lately. And I was completely guided to this person. So I can report more, you know, down the road. I don't have that appointment till the end of this month, but I'm fascinated by it. So it's great that you're doing that.
That's okay. Awesome. Yep. I feel there's some transformation that happened inside myself. I feel that. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Awesome. Oh, okay. And Fanny, am I correct? Like, I don't even fully understand. Somebody asked family what? It's family constellation work. And I don't even know if I know fully what that means, but that, I believe it has to do with looking at, like, does it have to do with looking at like patterns and, ancestor work? And
ancestor work, like whatever the emotion that your mom haven't processed, you kind of like go into ourselves. I mean, because we, for sensitive person, we kind of get all this unprocessed emotion from our ancestor and our family system. Yeah, so we kind of like process it to release it from our family. Yep.
Yeah.
And from our body. Yeah. And see that as a love in the family. Yeah, you will feel the love flowing during the process. Mm-hmm. That what is heal you. Yeah.
Thank you, Fanny. That's beautiful. That's beautiful. And that's, I mean, it's again, we can easily want to maybe, I'm speaking from my old coarse brain. We can easily want to dismiss something like intergenerational trauma or patterns that are passed down, because it's all an illusion. But there's one mind. And if there's one mind, like it's very, and we can really only share the truth, but it seems like we can share error. And so this type of work can be really helpful. And I just, the way that I've been guided into it, I'm like, there's no doubt that it's, you know, work, at least for me, that I know I'm supposed to be looking at. So thank you, Fanny. Thank you so much for sharing. I appreciate it. Paula, were you going to share something?
Yes. I'm just trying to think how I can.
Oh, I lost you.
I'm sorry.
Sorry. I couldn't hear you for a second, but I hear you again.
Okay. I think I'm not sitting close enough. I was out with friends last night, and one of the friends I actually grew up with, I've known him my entire life. And a lot of years ago, there was an incident that happened that was very disturbing to me and my family. And I thought, just in our conversation, it felt like he was going to bring that up in front of all of these other people. And I had such an anxiety attack. And I just thought, you know, just bring the Holy Spirit into this. And it wound up, he didn't say anything about this incident. And when I got home, and I'm really good friends with these people, and I enjoy seeing them. We get together like once a month. And when I got home, I thought, oh my God, I wonder if he would at some point in time bring that up, because it would be so embarrassing, and or not even embarrassing, but disturbing to me. Mm-hmm. And God is just, I recognize that this morning. Mm-hmm. This is something I really have to turn over, because I was really upset. And I thought, how would Jesus handle this? And I started reading today's workbook lesson, and I love to read Sarah's reflections, because she really explains the workbook lesson beautifully. I tell you, I had such a shift in perception around this situation. And I just started writing. It was just so wonderful, because all the fear and anxiety around it just disappeared, just literally was. And if the situation did arise in the future, I have absolutely no fear of how I would handle it. Because in a sense, what I felt Jesus was saying is, trust them to understand. Let them rise to the occasion to be decent human beings. And it's not, I just have a feeling none of that is even going to have to take place. Mm-hmm. I think there was such a, because one of the things I didn't realize is how I was hiding all of this from myself. This was like a secret long forgotten about. And I really felt it was a miracle last night that this was, the attention was brought to me to really take a look at it and face it and come to a conclusion that is so satisfying. So I just felt like this fit in so beautifully tonight with what we've been talking about.
It does. And I'm so glad you shared, Paula. I love, I always love your sharing. And the two big things that stand out to me from what you just shared are how, again, everything is so orchestrated. The Holy Spirit is like, okay, we're ready to heal this. I'm going to give you this up. You know, there's this opportunity here where there's this person who's going to, you know, like bring this up, and suddenly, and so you were able to recognize that and say, wait, this is a secret that I've been hiding, and it's time, I want to shift around this. And how beautiful that shift, this is the second point I want to make. And the way anxiety and fear works with like future tripping and getting so caught in the what ifs, you broke that cycle by dropping into the holy instant. You broke that cycle by turning to the Holy Spirit, by, you know, using a lesson, or just, I've just been back to opening my course book at random and just, you know, there's the answer, exactly what I need, just by opening up that book at random. That's what the miracle does. It interrupts the downward fear spiral. It interrupts it like that.
This idea that God is right now is so powerful, because he can help us handle any situation that's happening right now. Mm-hmm. And it's, I'm only just really starting to get it, like really get it. Hey, God can handle it. Mm-hmm. And okay, that's enough.
Well, if I can just add to what you just said about the power of that statement, God is, what struck me, I was troubled about something the other night, and I woke up, I just wasn't falling asleep right away. So I got up, and this is my opening my course book at random. And what did it for me was the statement, you did not create yourself.
Yeah.
God is, and you did not create yourself. Like, that means we literally, I know it's easier said than done, but like, we literally have nothing to worry about because God, like, we did not create ourselves. We did not create ourselves. We created the world. Yes. That's in the same sentence, recognizing that you created the world, but that you did not create yourself. So yourself, who we really are, not these bodies, that we didn't create that. God created that. And that's who we are. And that's unchangeable. And I found that just extremely, extremely comforting to the point where I was able to just fall right back asleep.
I just want to share one more thing. This has become like really embedded in my mind. And I think this is so helpful. With God, events unfold in miraculous ways beyond any of our own ability to plan an outcome equal to what is available when we trust in Him. Mm-hmm. That applies to absolutely every situation. And if we can just, this is my constant prayer, Holy Spirit, help me to be in the moment. Help mm-hmm. me to get in alignment.
Yeah. And that's the key, is turning to the
Help
Holy Spirit.
Help me to remember.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thank you, Paula.
You're welcome.
Mm. So good. Oh, anyone else before we finish the cameo? We have just a page and a half left. Mm. All right, let's do this. So we're at the very top now of page 1880. Given the importance of this vision for Helen's journey, so again, we're talking about the scroll vision, I believe. Given the importance of this vision for Helen's journey, it is not surprising that it found its way into the pages of the course. We find it in workbook lesson 169. Oneness, this is the workbook lesson, oneness is simply the idea God is. And in his being, He encompasses all things. No mind holds anything but Him. We say God is, and then we cease to speak, for in that knowledge, words are meaningless. There are no lips to speak them, and no part of mind sufficiently distinct to feel that it is now aware of something not itself. It has united with its source, and like the source itself, it merely is. We cannot speak, nor write, nor even think of this at all. It comes to every mind when total recognition that its will is God's has been completely given and received completely. It returns the mind into the endless present, where the past and future cannot be conceived. It lies beyond salvation, past all thought of time, forgiveness, and the holy face of Christ. The Son of God has merely disappeared into his Father, as his Father has in him. The world has never been at all. Eternity remains a constant state. So the commentary continues. This passage expands the meaning of God is, taking it far beyond what was implied in the original vision. This expansion really rests on the second sentence, and in his being, he encompasses all things. This means that there is nothing actually outside of God's isness. All that the above passage says rests on that single idea. We can picture this in terms of the imagery of Helen's vision. Imagine that once Helen rolled up the two sides of the scroll to conceal the past and the future, those two sides vanished, leaving the center panel free to expand and to ultimately encompass everything. Now everything is inside of God's being. Everything abides with him in the endless present, where the past and future cannot be conceived. This expansion of the center panel, given that it is limitless, must extend not just outward, but also forward to engulf the observer, the one who stands in front of the scroll. If God's being encompasses all things, then there cannot be a separate observer, a, quote, mind sufficiently distinct to feel that it is now aware of something not itself. The separate observer, like the two side panels, must ultimately vanish that God may be all in all. Thus, if we say God is and truly understand what we are saying, then that is the last thing we will ever say. For we are now no longer a distinct mind that stands apart and speaks of what it sees. We have disappeared into our Father, into a state in which his being is our being, a state in which the world has never been, in which nothing has ever happened to interrupt eternity's constant state. A Course in Miracles is completely focused on the achievement of this one supreme goal. That is why it was so important for Helen not to let her ego take charge of her gifts and use them for impressive feats of prediction. And that is undoubtedly why Jesus stopped Helen from trying to find what she believed to be her gravesite in the Qumran cemetery. As he later says in the Course, atonement might be equated with total escape from the past and total lack of interest in the future. We have an infinitely larger goal to attend to. And we have a smoother road to that goal with teachings and tools that were not available to us before, because Helen chose that center panel. That concludes Cameo 32, God is. I'm wondering if we can all just take a moment to drop into this sentence that we just read. Atonement might be equated with total escape from the past and total lack of interest in the future. I'm just wondering if we can just sort of like feel into that for a moment, what that could be like to right now experience total escape from what you conceive of as is your past and total lack of interest in the future. Can you imagine yourself being totally, and that's not in a depressed way or a throwing up your hands into the air kind of way, a total lack of interest in the future because you are plugged into God. You are plugged into the Holy Spirit, to Jesus now in this moment. And so the past falls away. We have no interest in the future because we know we've placed the future in the hands of God. Just kind of just dropping into that feeling, I know for me, feels really good. So we finished the cameos. Yay. Again, we read the next cameo, cameo 33. We read that on Easter. So this concludes the cameos. We'll be starting with the manual for teachers next week. Hooray. But before we do that, anybody have any, before we say goodbye for the night, we're almost at time. Does anybody have any comments or any questions or just insights that you want to share? Mary Beth, did I see your hand?
Yes. It tells me the God is in the present, and then with that atonement sentence, I'm thinking about when I say, Holy Spirit, I'm willing to see this differently. And I experience that freedom from whatever I was perceiving as an attack going on or judgment, or just realizing that I wasn't, I was seeing from ego. I can say, Holy Spirit, I'm willing to see this differently. And so many times, suddenly I just feel free of my judgments based on the past or fear of the future and what's going to come on. And I kept thinking through this entire reading too. I was just talking with a friend and we got to talking about how we react a certain way just based on past feelings or past experiences. And she was talking specifically in relation to her mother, who had lost her husband, my friend's father, 2 years ago, and the anniversary of his death was just recently. But she had noticed her mother was like lashing out at telemarketers who were calling and just getting very irritated and frustrated. And we realized in our conversation that that was probably her grief coming out sideways because her mother didn't really acknowledge. Mm-hmm. And she said, but my mother's always been that way, not to really be. And she says, I'm like that too. I'm not really an anniversary type person where I feel that. And I says, you know, I used to be that way too, where I thought I just wasn't one to, I don't know, remember and react based on an anniversary date, until a few years ago, as I started to open up my heart to all these processes, right? Mm-hmm. And 25 years after my father's death, on his anniversary, I feel it now. Mm-hmm. Whereas before, I didn't. And when you were talking about when we go back to the cause, when he first passed away, I was a single mother with young girls who were missing their grandfather. I was now taking care of my mother through the process. And I didn't have time to grieve. So I just told myself, well, that's just how I am. Mm. And it's not. It was just all base. But once I start making present moment choices, mm-hmm. those holy instants, mm-hmm. Then I just open up to new ways. So
yeah. Oh, Mary Beth. That's beautiful. You know, you're reminding me that one of the characteristics of God's teachers is open-mindedness. And, you know, when we tell ourselves like, I am this way or I am that way, we're reinforcing a closed, like a decision, you know, that we've made. That's the opposite of open-mindedness. What you described was just that process of coming to just open and, you know, be willing to allow whatever needs to come up for healing, and it brought you back. You were guided back to that time to look at that with Holy Spirit. And so thank you for sharing that. That's a beautiful example of when we put the Holy Spirit in charge. The Holy Spirit's there and will guide us and will be there to. I mean, the Holy Spirit's job is to help us heal. That's the Holy Spirit's job. To do that healing. So yeah, thank you. That's really beautiful. Ah, 33 cameos, Deidre says. And Andrea, you're next. In angel numbers, the number 3 is associated with Jesus and ascended masters. And there's 33 cameos. That's so cool. Thank you, Deidre. I love it. Andrea.
I was just thinking about in this cameo is there's a lot of emphasis on the past and also the future, but especially the past. I always feel like there's two different ways of talking about the past. Like one, on one hand, if we're in the physical construct of time as human beings, we're in human form right now. So if we're talking about the physical construct of human time, then like you said earlier, Corinne, it's really important to understand the whole context of what you're talking about before trying to forgive it. Otherwise, it's just a spiritual bypass. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then on the other hand, in the more spiritual sense of time does not exist, and God is, and it's all the holy instant in the present moment, is the very reason why Helen choosing to not try to read the past was so pivotal. Because, and that's the same way that when we truly forgive something, when we forgive ourselves for having made an error in judging something from the past, mm-hmm. it's because it doesn't really exist. It's all just an illusion. So when we truly forgive it and recognize our oneness with it, it forgives everybody for everything, because we've reconnected with the truth that God is, and God is only in the present. But I have to be careful when I'm doing that one versus when I'm talking about physical time, lest I spiritually bypass something where I'm really holding on to a physical sense of time.
Right. Andrea, that was so helpful. And I don't know if I can put into words just the vibe, like the feeling that's coming up for me, but it's almost like feeling into the difference of allowing the forgiveness process to be done for us, where we're lifted out of time into timelessness. And it's an experience that comes through us, but it didn't happen because I, Corinne, said, oh, there is no past. I'm not going to look at it because there is no past. It's only in the present. Like the difference, I mean, we can all feel that difference, right? And that's how the bypass is the, there is no past. It's only the present, not going to look, versus, again, there, that guidance piece of the experience of forgiveness that comes through us. We might need to look at things from the past or whatever it is. And then, you know, we're lifted, we're transported. It's something that happens through us, but is not of us, and that we do not do, you know, Corinne doesn't do that part. So I love what you just shared, Andrea. It was really, really helpful. Thank you. Steve. Omni, is that Latin? I'm not going to try to read it. Something perfectum. All things in three are perfect. Oh, cool. I love that.
Omni trinum est perfectum. It's Latin for all things in three are perfect.
Awesome.
And that's
awesome.
Associated with it. I have three hearts intertwined for my three boys. So.
Awesome. Oh, thank you, Steve. Yeah,
it's a good one.
Thank you so much. Well, everyone, thank you again for being here. I'm excited that we just finished the cameos and now we're going to read the manual for teachers. So the cool thing about that also is that you can read any edition of the book. I believe the manual for teachers is the same in all the editions, at least majority of it. So that's super exciting that we'll start that again next week. So I love you all. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. And see you in a week. Bye, everyone.
Mwah. Bye.
Love you all. Bye-bye.
Love you.
Bye, everyone. Bye.